It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
If you wrap foil around that, just like the little bit of the base part of the banana where the fruit is, wrap foil around that top and they will last longer.
You know, I'm something of a scientist myself.
Who needs your bananas to last longer, though?
Look, I don't want to go to the store every day for bananas.
They're 8 cents each.
What the hell are you talking about? What is going on?
You're going to wrap them in foil?
They're better when they're just a little green. Yeah.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Too much work.
Not that much trouble, Rich.
Too much work.
Says the guy that's got a spreadsheet with 3,000 fantasy teams.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I mean, all these clips are so ancient. I don't have a spreadsheet, all right? But I do have teams. I drafted one last night, by the way.
Well, how do you keep track of them all?
I don't have to. It's 2026. Somebody else does that.
Okay. All right.
For me. But
I thought you would like investing your time and energy and brain in keeping all those columns neat and having those teams all on something that you're doing yourself manually just because, you know, that's how you are.
I'll get there.
Okay. Don't you have them all written down in a notebook where you're only using the front page of
No, you know what? There are only so many hours in the day. And I'm spending some of those hours, heretofore hours devoted to fantasy spreadsheets, to puzzles.
Oh, okay.
Because I feel that over the last decade, those spreadsheets really are not plus EV. Like, they're more of them are just sort of it's something to do to get through a day rather than something useful. Because by the time the season comes around, I'm not on those spreadsheets. Like, I'm not even really doing anything with them. Mm-hmm. I already have the app and the website that have all the teams and who's available and waivers.
So you're like,
I don't need the spreadsheet.
You're really like duplicating work here. That's all that's being done for you by computers.
Yeah, I don't need the spreadsheet. Doesn't really help me.
You're being phased out.
I mean,
your own fantasy life. You're being phased out.
And I'm not even kidding when I say this. People very much more serious about this than I am. Those people exist.
Mm-hmm. I believe that
they're using that sort of work for knowing who they've got and who they've got enough of, because they've drafted 7 times already today and they have another draft in 5 minutes, and how many shares of Travis Hunter do I have, you know? So for those people, and that kind of was me, but I still wasn't really doing it right efficiently, those people use that information. They need that. They want to know, do I have too much Josh Allen or not enough? And if you're drafting literally hundreds of teams, you don't necessarily know.
How could you ever have too much Josh Allen?
Well, that's a good question.
I think we all need as much Josh Allen as we can possibly. I guess there is a point where you would be full, I guess, but I'm not there.
Do we have enough Bo Byram right now in our lives? What do you think? Is he going? How are you reading the tea leaves on this? Is he going? I think maybe he's going, but I'm gullible.
I think he is. I think it's very likely that they will move him. You know, it's funny, not funny. It's, you know, maybe you know, not being as thorough as I should be about this stuff. Like you hear Jarmo Kekäläinen at the end of the year talk about how it really stood out, right? How cold he seemed about Tuck. You know, very calculated, you know, just measuring his words and, you know, sort of bracing us, I think, for, you know, it's going to be tough. Byram and Benson, like, right away, extension, extension, extension. If they were to do that for Byram, like, if they could get Byram to agree to some big extension, you know, somewhere between Dahlin and Power.
Name it.
Is probably the sweet spot.
Seven.
Like, 7 or 8.
Brady.
Or 10, yeah, right. Like, somewhere in that range is where you would land. And as much as, I mean, I know a lot of people share this viewpoint. Like, I started talking about those 4 dudes on the blue line are this team's superpower. Kekäläinen talked like that too. Like, it drives our team, that kind of talk, right? But if they sign another defenseman to that contract, even with the cup inflating like it's expected to over the next couple of years, mm-hmm. you're talking about 3 guys being paid in like the top 25 of defenseman salaries in the league on one team. And that does not exist. Like, no team in the league has made that commitment to blue liners. Now, you could say, well, maybe no team has this great a collection of guys. But it would be a lot of resources piled into one position. You know, the justification for it is what? Well, it drives our team. It's our superpower, like I've been saying. So we want to hang on to our fastball. But in a landscape where it seems more and more likely, like they're trying to find a way to replace Alex Tuck, I don't know that you can really devote that much money to that position. Because Samuelson, Power, and Dahlin would be, I think Power is right there on the line. I chose 25. That's where Power is in the rankings currently. Now, that'll change.
He's 25th in AAV.
Annual average value. 25th or 26th. He's okay. He's right there. Dahlin is like second or third.
Okay.
And so I think it was sort of there for us to dig in a little bit. Like, is this how likely is it that they do this? Right. It's like the Bengals signing two number one receivers.
Interesting.
Kind of thing. Right. Like, is this the best way to allocate our resources? And so, you know, Byram, I think, would have a certain kind of value for teams that don't have even one guy that warrants being paid like that. So I'm open to it, especially if it's Toronto and especially if it's Matthew Knies. And I think Matthew Knies, I don't think I could build a better idea, age-wise, body type, contract, quality of player. I haven't looked to see what kind of penalty killer he is, but I could not think of a better guy. I might be guilty. I've been crushing on Knies since he showed up in the league. So, like, I'm kind of a fanboy of his, but I think that is a trade that would get me to move Byram. I don't know that I would say the same about Power, and, like, let's not even talk about Dahlin and Samuelson. They're in a separate category.
I think Power should be.
Should be also in a separate category?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't
think... If it's my team.
Right. I don't think I would trade Power for Knies.
If it's my team.
But if it's Byram, I think I could get there. Because I think that would answer at a very, I think, reasonable salary for the immediate future. And even for a few years after. Knies is signed for 4 or 5 more years.
Very Sabres.
Yeah. And I think now, you know, what you got to then tell me is how I'm replacing Bowen Byram on my team. Like, what, where is that, you know?
Well, this
and
is
that's what free agency in the trade market is for.
Yes. This is super interesting, this one. Because really, and I don't know that I'm really qualified to answer these questions, but it is a, you know, take football. What are we the Bills have the league's leading rusher. Okay, great. How many wins is that? What if they had replacement level running back? Would they really be any worse? You know, maybe one win. I don't know the answer to that. But positional value varies, obviously. In hockey, it's narrower. It's only, really, it's center, but then it's forwards, and then it's D, and then it's goalie. Like, you have to figure out what is any of this really worth. And if I have... Not to mention the cap allocation, but if I have 3 defensemen that I think are borderline elite, what is it worth to me to have 4? Can my 3rd carry
right
somebody else?
Right.
Like, that's really where the smarties at the Sabres are probably crunching all that stuff, and I don't think I know the answer to that, but it seems intuitive. Although I would have liked Kesselring to stay around. Maybe he was untenable.
That's the part of this that's really weird, is the timing of that coupled with now reports that Byram could be in play, because you might have thought, how bad could it have gotten with Kesselring?
Maybe really bad.
That you're trading him when you might be about to trade Byram. Like, Kesselring would be, that was why he was acquired, was to play that role. Again, Samuelson was in the wilderness at this time last year.
And also, Byram wasn't good at all.
That's right. Like, so I don't know, like, the timing, that's why I'm still sort of working on, I might be like, so the Always Sunny with the dry erase board, the guy's got, like, he's got this manic, like, these are all connected somehow. I just don't know the thread yet. But to just move on Kesselring with this, you know, being in the wind now today, would be odd. It was just so, we just got, this is now never going to work. We'll find a better idea to do what we wanted to do last year with Michael Kesselring.
Yes.
So, you know.
I can live with that.
That should be able to be done, and you shouldn't have to, I don't think, build your team in such a way that you are paying your blue line $28 million a year with three guys. I mean, I'm not even including Sam. It's nuts. So I feel like I sort of missed that when Kekalainen was talking and being so bullish on the idea of keeping Byram. Maybe he was just playing cards with the league. Like, this guy we value, we love him, you know, he's a part of our core, yada, yada, yada. Now let me start making some calls.
Or he was talking, like, almost literally the day after the season ended, and he was talking like we were all talking, which is like, wow, that was awesome.
And why would we want to change anything? There's also this. I mean, from Byram's perspective, he's limited here, right? Like, he you can scoff at this if you want, but, like, on a team like Toronto, like, if he were to be traded to Toronto, he immediately becomes their number one defenseman and their quarterback power
in
their,
a year,
their power play quarterback.
In a year, he'll be the most highly paid defenseman in the NHL.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Or maybe when they make the trade, because they sign him right away.
Right.
If you're giving up Matthew Knies, right, you're not renting Bowen Byram. Right. You're committing to him.
That's right.
So the opportunity for him to just get to a level, he's roadblocked here. He just is not going to become that guy here because Dahlin and Power outrank him. As excellent as I thought he was their best player in the Boston series, Byram. I thought he was dynamite in it.
Then you thought he was bad.
And I thought he was bad against Byram. I thought he looked like he ran out of gas against Montreal. He was very vulnerable, I thought, against Montreal. But anyway.
But that's interesting in itself.
Yeah.
Like, is that a matchup thing? Boston really couldn't. They weren't dangerous. They were pretty solid, mm-hmm, and steady, but they weren't dangerous. So a guy like that, I don't know what I want to do with Byram. I do and I don't. I have been critical of the Sabres for, this goes back all, you know, a year or a little less. Not even really. It was even when the season was already underway. Just like, why? They wanted to trade him. They couldn't or didn't or whatever that was, both. And so what happens here? And then they got really pretty, and I just stopped talking about it. Like, just, okay, well, this seems to be going pretty well. And we don't need to trade good players on good teams. We have a good team now. Mm-hmm. But I guess I really don't feel like I have my footing on what changed this year. We talked to Chad one day, and because he would be one of my first calls, you know, like, what happened here? And like, well, you know, situations and players, he's still super young.
Mm-hmm.
Players get better. That's the kind of thing I tend to bet against. I don't know. I want to have more clarity on him than I do, but I'm not going to be mad if he's traded.
I might have some regret, but I think, again, for the right player, the right deal, I have to be open to it. I'm just not sure it makes the most sense to have three $8 to $11 million defensemen on one team.
Well, who is there? Somebody? It's probably somebody from outside the organization, right? Like, if they did this,
yeah. I mean, I have no indication that anybody from Rochester is ready, or that Radim Mertka is ready to show up and like win a top four job.
What's he though
on a cup contending team? He's probably a trade piece too. But he's last year's number one pick, and he was pretty raw, project-y guy. Big, he's going to take time, all that man strength, okay, yada, yada. Like, he's not. To me, I'd be stunned if he's in there thinking, oh, we can get by without Byram because this guy's ready. I just don't think they have a guy ready for that role.
All right.
So I think they got to go outside to get it if they move Byram.
Next question, what about Gleb Pugachev?
This is a draft pick idea?
Yes. He is in the Athletics mock draft today at the 20th pick. Although he's a winger.
Oh, well. Can he skate backwards?
I mean, he's from Russia. So how do you, I mean, of course. But the article was like, Yarmo will draft Russians. And, you know, teams have avoided doing so.
The Sabres have not been shy about that. In fact, a couple of the defensemen I'm thinking of from Rochester that have been there a couple of years that I don't think are ready are Russian guys. Mm-hmm. So they haven't been scared off of that for a little while here, I don't think. But
let me throw in another name here.
All right.
Nyes is one. So Matthew Nyes, Leafs, two ways, young,
big,
cost controlled,
mm-hmm.
a lot to like. Hellebuck. Is he someone you think the Sabres would call on?
Yes.
Me too. And that's also this,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, that's Byram is this is also a kind of a sell high moment maybe for Byram,
mm-hmm.
where you have a particular challenge in that you have to figure out how to pay him in a year commensurate with other defensemen on your team that might be better or in the same, you know, the whole thing you just laid out, like just sort of the balance of power on your roster and everything like that. But, you know, what? But what? Like this would be kind of a sell high moment on him unless you think he's going to the Hall of Fame or something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, an 8 to 10 year contract at top dollar is worth signing him to, which I don't know that I do, considering especially how the Sabres are already built. So Hellebuck, what's that? That's Luukkonen.
Right.
That's Byram. Here's something else about this.
And the 20th pick, maybe.
Okay. I mean, I think it would be a little bit, maybe this is inside out, but a little bit sexy if the Sabres traded their pick in a draft that they're hosting.
Mm-hmm.
Because who does that? You know, old school is you want that moment in your arena. Really, a few thousand people are in there. Everybody else is outside. They're not going to see this player for 5 years, you know, whatever. You don't have to do it. But here's what I was going to say. We're maybe the shoe is on the other foot here, where the Sabres are often so seemingly disadvantaged in trade talks because players want to leave, or there's just sort of a supposition that players want to leave. And okay, well, this is really not an even trade, but I kind of have to do this. And right now, they could feel like the teeter-totter is the other way. And they're up here. And here's Winnipeg with a player that has a lot of marketability, has a lot of value on the market, but doesn't want to be there anymore, right? So you can be, if you will, you can be the alpha
mm-hmm.
in a trade like that. Now, I don't know if I want to trade it all. I don't know if I want to push in on a goalie.
For a 34-year-old goalie, yeah.
But I think, again, in theory, I mean, I know I would be excited about it, whatever.
It would be.
Stop analyzing it and just feel it.
Yeah, the fan base would be energized if they made a move like that.
Imagine opening night with him.
Right.
So, analytically, maybe not, but feels-wise, 100%. And I don't know that it's such a bad idea.
It's not my favorite idea. I don't know how likely it is they'll get there, but I wouldn't want to rule it out like we've said at the outset here. I mean, I think there's certainly a case to be made to just run it back with the three guys, maybe trade one of Ellis or Levi because both of them have to clear waivers now to go to Rochester. So you're going to lose. You're potentially going to lose one of them when the season is about to start if you try to do that. So you should probably try to mix that in somewhere. But I think the three goalies, I can buy that they would want to stay put with that. Stand pat.
You mentioned Kekalainen on Byram. How about Lindy and Kekalainen on the goalies? I mean, are they playing 4D chess on this one?
Maybe,
like,
maybe.
You guys don't even know this, but we're going to be able to have three goalies because the rules are going to change. Yeah. Like, and what they're winking at each other going, we kind of know we're going to be able to make this trade.
We're going
to
trade for Hellebuyck, yeah. Yeah, I don't
love it. What would that be?
I don't love it. I don't know. The cost to acquire really matters a lot here with a goalie. Like, I don't know, at that age, with the contract, that should, despite how excellent he's been year over year and the gold medal this past February and everything else, I feel like his age in the contract should limit what Winnipeg can get back. Like, I don't think this is, you know, it's different if he's 28. But I think at his age, I don't think I got to go 3-4 pieces to get him like I would for an elite forward or defenseman.
You know, that's probably right. And if you look around the NHL, is there a team that would? I don't know. I mean, again, Brandon Bussey won the Stanley Cup versus Carter Hart.
Right.
I mean, two guys that really didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just who has the momentum on that particular piece or, you know, angle not continued in the same direction?
Yeah. Bussey played a lot. He led them in wins, but he was sort of a, you know, he's still out of nowhere.
I saw that, actually. I know that because I saw it on his LinkedIn page.
No. Okay.
Which is like two spots above working at Chipotle. He worked at Chipotle. Did you know that?
Yes. I've heard all the stories about him.
Well, I mean, thank you, Sabres, right? Let's all in unison.
Yeah.
Here we are. Even if they have nothing to do with this latest churn in the media stuff, which they probably do,
mm-hmm.
I'm now feeling like everything that comes out about them is what they want out.
Yeah.
Including Parayko.
I would think if they're maybe even feeling like they're hitting a stall in talks on Byram, that's why you get to many teams are inquiring. Like, hey, you know, you might get beat on this if you don't move. Yeah. You know, that it feels a lot like that.
There is logic behind them wanting to break the Parayko trade out. Put the pressure on them. We're good.
Yeah.
I don't know that they did that. Somebody did that and somebody else was upset.
Right.
But I think there was logic behind the Sabres doing it because let's just announce it and see what happens. Not directly. Let Pierre mm-hmm. LeBrun do it or whoever is going to do it. But, you know, didn't work out. Or it did,
right.
Because they still have the pick.
Right.
They've already moved up.
And they still have Mertka.
And they still have Mertka.
Right.
All right. Well, we'll get into this some more later with, if not beforehand, Matt Larkin will join us today, Daily Faceoff. Next, Matthew Collar. I can't wait to tell Matthew about my draft last night. He and I talk every Wednesday on Purple Insider about fantasy football, and that is going to be exciting.
All right, I'll go.
Oh, like you don't care.
I'll go talk at the water cooler with someone.
Brian Koziol later on the first round of the U.S. Open.
Still have a water cooler? I don't think we have one. No, we don't.
We just have broken vending machines.
AI replaced the water cooler.
And Jeremy will be on today.
All right.
AI 2.0. Is the new water cooler chemical formula. Jeremy's got an event tonight. We'll talk to him about that and more as well. So lots of people. Thanks for being with us for all of it. Matt Collar on the Vikings, who the Bills play on a Monday night this year, and more next. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
I definitely understand his difficulty of understanding some things just because this offense is difficult, and especially going against our defense, seeing the different coverages, seeing the roles, the disguises that our defense do, it's really going to help him out when the season comes if he's the starting quarterback.
We're so good at this. Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson would not have been eligible for the Cup of Coffee draft on the basis of that the Bills traded the pick that was used to take him for Stephon Diggs.
But yet somehow Antonio Brown qualified.
Yeah. Well, Ian Rappaport, none other than Ian Rappaport, reported that he was on the Bills. That's a little bit more. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, pleased. I mean, that doesn't even really do it justice to be joined by Matthew Collar. Thrilled? How about this?
Thrilled's a little
bit.
Sorry, man.
Really?
And I just I felt like I was too eager to say thrilled. I was too thrilled say thrilled.
I'm thrilled. Yeah. Wester Hotline, Matt, a former, he's on our tree, former friend of ours, well, current friend of ours, former co-worker of ours, purpleinsider.com, killing it in Minnesota. Matt, what's new?
Well, I am overjoyed to be joining you guys. So, you know, I was hoping Bulldog wouldn't take that back. But, you know, we're doing good. We're doing good. Trying to figure out if there's a real quarterback competition or not, which is, you know, not knowing who the Vikings quarterback is going to be. I've gotten really good at that over the years. It seems like that's all the time here. So, I'm doing all right.
Bulldog hates Kyler Murray.
I can't stand Kyler Murray.
Why is that?
I think he only chose to play football instead of baseball because the pathway to a huge payday was easier or sooner.
What do you think?
I don't think that's true. And here's why I don't think that's true is because I did a story where I was talking to a couple of guys who covered Kyler Murray in Texas about how he was the best high school player in the history of the state of Texas, which that's like being the best hockey player ever from the state of Minnesota, right? Like it's that says a lot about him. They all thought that he was going to go play baseball. But the reason that they came away with for him playing football was that that was where his heart really was. Mm. And when you think about like his dad was a, you know, Texas A&M quarterback. And like, that's been a huge part of their relationship, you know, with Kyler Murray. His personality and the way he is outwardly, I think, lends itself to people writing their own narratives about Kyler because he never fights back. Like, he never comes – he's not Baker Mayfield. Like, he's not going to come out and say, you guys are writing this about me and it's not true. Mm-hmm. He's just sort of allowed everyone to say whatever they want to say about him, and he kind of does his own thing. And I've now spent months trying to figure out who Kyler Murray is, and I can tell you it's very hard. Because his circle is extremely small, so it's hard to find people that are like willing to really talk about who he is as a person, like the whole does he play too many video games type of thing. Right. But, you know, when I did have a really long conversation with Josh Weinfuss, who covers him for ESPN, his main thing was that he thinks that there's some misunderstanding there based on the fact that Kyler is such a quiet guy, that he doesn't spit fire. He's not somebody that's jumping around the sidelines and stuff. And I think that that makes people think that. And then when you look at the organization that he's been in, like, we make fun of the Jets, we make fun of the Browns because they're just hysterical, but the Arizona Cardinals are abominable. Like, yeah. When the NFL Players Association voted, you know, on the coaching and graded the facilities and everything, they gave their owner an F-. I didn't even think there was an F-.
There like, isn't. They made it up.
Gave them. Right. So, and even when you look at, like, what he's been dealing with recently there, he had an ACL tear. They tore the roster down. They've changed coaches. They can never get top-notch coaches because no one wants to work for that owner. And then they drafted a wide receiver, 4th overall, who is atrocious. They drafted Keon Coleman with the 4th overall pick.
Wow.
And, I mean,
Matthew.
After watching the tape, this would be as if Keon Coleman had actually played a ton. That's Marvin Harrison Jr. So
wow.
I think with Kyler, just like how everyone said Sam Darnold saw ghosts, they will change their tune once they see him throw the ball to Justin Jefferson.
Yeah. Well, I definitely would plead guilty to inventing my own narrative about him. I mean, clearly. I mean,
it's what we do.
I'm not talking to someone from the inner circle. But what you're telling us and me here is maybe take with a grain of salt that there were clauses in the contract about video games because it came from the Arizona Cardinals.
Yes, so I've looked into that as well. And the story that I got is that as Stefan Diggs once said, truth to all rumors. So there is like an issue with him and coming out of college where Cliff Kingsbury implemented a college offense for the Arizona Cardinals that he had been playing with through college. So he felt like, and I'm not saying this is right, but it was kind of like the Caleb Williams thing where he felt like he knew the offense already and did not probably put in the work he should. Now, he still had relative success. Like 2021 is a really good season. But I think he came into the league like, I already know this offense. I don't need to do more, which is maybe an arrogance of being the number one overall player. But what happened was with his agent and the team, and remember, this is the Arizona Cardinals, so it's a bad team. They had a huge like battle over his contract, and ultimately the public was sort of mocking Arizona for giving out such a terrible contract, and their response from their GM was to leak this out there to make Kyler look bad. So you're making your own franchise quarterback look bad because you're mad that you got run over the coals in a contract negotiation. So there was truth to it, but it was also ridiculous that it ever came out there. And then my understanding is, because I know Jonathan Gannon from Minnesota, that he and Jonathan Gannon had a great relationship to where they were going to each other's houses watching film, that they worked really closely together, and that it was not Jonathan Gannon's choice to bench him last year. That was the management wanting to tank and lose every game, which we support tanking here. But
we do.
There's a lot with Kyler that's sort of been like, it reminds me of Sam Darnold, where you start going through it and you're like, man, with Darnold, Carolina, good Lord. You know, the Jets, like this guy had been through it. Doesn't mean he's going to be the best quarterback in the league with the Vikings. But when I hear this stuff, I'm like, this is stuff that would not happen with a more premier organization necessarily. So I think that when I watch back Kyler, I see his flaws, and they're there because we went through this with Doug Flutie, who I love deeply. But like there were issues with the height, and it comes up. But also, I think that a lot of the organizational stuff weighed heavy. And one of my favorite stats to give you guys is that the last 3 years, Kyler is 13-17. When he doesn't play, they're 2-19. No, one. I think it's 1-19. One, or maybe two. 1 or 2-19. They win like never when he doesn't play. So I think this is how you talk yourself into it. I don't know how it's actually going to go, but there's a lot of stuff when you go through it where you're like, this is just atrocious what he was dealing with in Arizona.
Matthew Collar. PurpleInsider.com, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog. We support tanking. The Vikings were 4-8 with Max Brosmer throwing passes to the Seahawks on every play last year. And then they had the nerve to go win 5 straight and finish with a winning record. So they might not agree. But you got to love the Murray bet for Minnesota. I mean, there's no competition there as I see it. Maybe you'll push back. It's Murray week one, I think. You know, 99% at least. And I think it could work. You know, there's an athlete there if he wants to run again. And you've got a coach, Matthew, that knows how to get the most out of quarterbacks, except for McCarthy, I guess. I don't know. Maybe that was the most you could get out of him. So I feel like it's a great bet.
It's a tremendous bet because they have a roster with a lot of veteran players that, I mean, if you roll McCarthy back out there and he plays like he did last year and gets hurt a bunch of times because he holds on to the ball too much and he plays reckless, and then he throws the ball 50 miles over, you know, Justin Jefferson's head like he did repeatedly, you're talking about kind of full disaster mode. And maybe that would be a good tank, but, you know, that's not what they're really looking to do. With Kyler also, you know, there wasn't a quarterback to draft, so even if they did – you know, lose all the games, it wasn't like, it'd be great if they had gotten Caleb Downs or something, but, right. You know, it wasn't like there was a quarterback that was there that they could get to the bottom to draft, you know, a Fernando Mendoza or something. So this was by far the best bet. He's also 28. Like, it's not like he's 34 years old and they're just kind of hoping that, you know, this becomes Raiders Rich Gannon or something. Like, the guy is almost the same age as when Sam Darnold turned the corner. But also there's another stat I could throw at you, which is kind of interesting, that Kevin O'Connell, as the Vikings coach, is 31-9 when his quarterback at least has a 90 quarterback rating. 90 is not even that great. When his quarterback even plays okay, because they have the best defensive coordinator in the National Football League, they win most of the time. And, you know, I think with Kyler, I don't believe that you have to be the best quarterback in the entire NFL to be a legitimate contender. And I think we see this happen in the NFC a lot, where I don't believe that Jalen Hurts is the best quarterback in the NFL. I don't think Sam Darnold is. And, you know, I was kind of, you know, maybe his biggest defender when he left Minnesota. I don't think Brock Purdy's the best quarterback in the NFL. It's really been a roster building and coaching competition, but you have to reach a certain bar. And could I see Kyler being just as good as a Jared Goff, a Jordan Love, and win the division if they have the best, you know, defense and they've beefed up their offensive line? They have, I think a better maybe run game this year potentially. And also, Justin Jefferson last year was just made irrelevant by the quarterback play. It's not, you know, that long ago that he was offensive player of the year, and I don't think he's changed. So, You know, I think that Kyler staying healthy is always a question. His ups and downs are a huge question. But if you can even get reasonably good play from him, then at least you're a serious team in the NFC.
Is it? Would you expect it to be peaceful between he and McCarthy, or would the organization want to move McCarthy out of there?
That is a question we're talking about a lot, because I don't know if I have a great feel on that. I mean, McCarthy's first press conference was exactly the opposite of what anyone would have told him to do. Like, they would have said, just don't make a bunch of headlines that makes it seem like you're really ticked off. And what he did was make a bunch of headlines. That
you saw that too, Matt? You saw that too?
Yeah. I read that the same way. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, and like, that's also not how he ever talks to us. So it was like, oh, okay, I get it. It's either our fault and you don't realize other people are watching, or like, you're just really mad and can't contain it, which I think is actually a major J.J. McCarthy issue, is that he wears his emotions on his sleeve to the point where it's just uncontrollable for the coaches, for his teammates, and that was problematic last year. I think that he's had some really bad breaks. Like, an injury when he comes into the league is so tough, because that's huge development time. And then last year, the act you have to follow is a guy who not only won 14 games, but then was en route to doing it again the whole season. Everyone is talking about, hey, that guy who left Minnesota is kicking ass. Like, oh, that's great for, you know, JJ to come in with a veteran team. He's never played before. And, oh, just be our franchise quarterback. And we let go this great quarterback for you. I think that really got to him. But I also think that, you know, accuracy is really tough to fix unless, you know, even when you're Josh Allen, but like, he's not Josh Allen in terms of his athleticism and his size and all that stuff. He's not the runner that Josh Allen is. So the likelihood that this turns around, I mean, even the research, if you look up guys who played quarterback this badly through their first 10 starts, I mean, you're talking like Jimmy Clausen land.
Woof.
So I don't know what they do. I mean, I think for this year, sure, like, keep him as your backup quarterback, try to develop him, see where you're at for next year. Because Kyler, I mean, he could play well and then just be like, thanks for the memories, guys. I'm going to go sign elsewhere, because he's got a no franchise tag clause in his contract. So this thing is totally up in the air. I mean, they could trade him at the end of camp, or he could end up being somebody that they want to keep in case Kyler gets hurt. I really don't know. It kind of comes down to how mature he wants to be.
Week 9, the Bills in Minnesota, November 9th, Monday night. Will you go to that game, Matt?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you'll be at that? You'll be at that game?
Oh, yeah. I'll be there. 100%. Yeah.
So is
game of the year for us.
Sammy P is going to that game, Bulldog. Sam Paniatovich, he said last week he's going to be at that game. Buffalo at Minnesota.
All right.
Matthew, the Bills play 5 games against the NFC, and they're all in primetime. All the NFC North games, and I'm talking like you don't know this, all the NFC North games, and then at the Rams as well. 6 games in the division, none in primetime, which, you know, the Jets don't have any night games themselves. Miami's probably bad. New England. But how about that? Detroit, Chicago, Green Bay, Minnesota, LA Rams, all at night.
I love that, because those are all good matchups. I also think that it says a lot about the NFC North and the NFC in general. One of the things that I've been trying to do for summer content, because I get very frustrated by power rankings, like, why do people read them? And so, you know, my listeners have challenged me, like, oh, if you're so great, then why don't you power rank? So here I am, power ranking the NFC every once in a while. And I am struggling. Like, the top is easy, the Rams, of course. And then, you know, Seattle, I think, deserves to be right there with them. They didn't lose that much. But then who after that? Like, the Lions missed the playoffs, but there's a good argument for the Lions, that they were just so hurt last year and so forth. There's a good argument for the Packers. I think Chicago's going to get hit by regression, but if Caleb Williams does the Josh Allen thing, and he's certainly the athlete to be able to do it, then they're just going to win a bunch of games. San Francisco is still out there. Philadelphia went and, you know, got a top-notch pass rusher, made a really good move in the draft. Like, it's tricky. And I wonder what you guys think, though, about that Bills schedule. That sounds pretty tough. Are people worried?
It is. We might need to do, in Matt's honor, we might need to do reverse NFC power rankings. And I think the only easy answer is Arizona is 16, because I don't know who else would be. And then after that, like Matt is saying, you could really mix things up. The schedule, you know, Matt, we got to go, but it's the first year of the stadium. It's a new head coach. Almost every week is going to be really hot. And that's assuming the games with the Dolphins and the Jets are not that interesting, but you never know. Those are rivals, division games. Every other game, we decided that Vegas was the fifth least, appealing or competitive looking game on the schedule. Everything else, NFC North, Rams, AFC West, Baltimore, Houston in week one. There's a lot going on that schedule, as you know. So, yeah, it's going to be
good. I love that. That sounds awesome.
How's life otherwise? Good?
Great. Yeah, I just got back from golfing. We have another greyhound that we adopted.
Yes.
So, right. That's been wonderful.
Name?
Wonderful process. And my wife is broadcasting games for the number one player in the WNBA, Olivia Miles, who has taken the league by storm. So that's been awesome as well.
How do you name your dogs?
This one came very naturally. He is so outgoing that we just named him Buddy because he wants to be everybody's buddy. His race dog name was Hooligan, and we did not like that. He was so friendly that we named him Buddy.
Very nice. Glad to have you on, Matthew. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
I was thrilled with how that went. I hope Matt heard that.
Yeah?
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Why do you say that? Because how it started?
Well, I started. I didn't want to use thrilled.
He caught you.
It was only 15 minutes ago.
One thing about that guy, he will catch you.
Yep.
Buddy. Yeah, he's a greyhound guy. It's a greyhound house. Matt and Sloan both were here in this building for years, if you didn't know. Coming up at 4, Matt Larkin. Lots of NHL rumors to talk about. Jeremy White will join us next hour as well. And Brian Koziol, too, U.S. Open. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog.